very excited that Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glatt has joined us this morning. Just before I introduce him, I just wanted to thank all the members of the Scholar and Residence Committee who have been working hard on this event and many others. And I'm really excited about all the great work that we're doing. In particular, I want to thank Daniel for taking the lead on this particular opportunity. So yashar koach to everyone who's involved. Rabbi Dr. Glatt has frankly more titles in his bio than I understand. the smicha, the rabbi part I get, even the MD I understand, but when we get to the FACP, FIDSA, FHEA, they probably have something to do with infectious diseases, but I probably have to ask a medical student to understand all the details. But he really is renowned for his work in medicine, in administration. And also, and there was a very beautiful article in The Commentator, I think it was an interview, which I saw, I think, last year, if that was true. But in the last year, it was a very beautiful and moving article that you can all find about his later in life decision to combine his work in Avodas HaKodesh, namely medicine, together with the more classical Avodas HaKodesh, namely the Rabbanas. Now serves as assistant rabbi in Rebbe Village Shul in Young Israel of Woodmere. And he's really an international lecturer and a renowned authority on different topics, medicine, halacha. He's written a very popular book, I think it was published by Art Scroll, on two books, one about visiting the sick, and another one on women in the Talmud, which were published over the last number of years. And he's really just an outstanding figure in the community. Ultimately, it goes back to Yeshiva University. He also mentioned to me that although he didn't technically study here, actually served as a professor here at Einstein for some time. So he's familiar with the community, and I very much consider him a product of Torah Mada and of someone who's really combined in a very beautiful and inspiring way to us all his work in the medical field and his work as a Talmud Chacham as well. So we're very excited to have Rabbi Dr. Glatt here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very, very much for that very kind introduction. I'd like to give you a talk that I wish I had gotten as a medical student, which I have hopefully will try to synthesize for you some of the problems and issues that I've faced throughout my career and that undoubtedly you face, maybe slightly different, somewhat the same, but very important that you should hear some of the things that I'm saying. I'll give some textual basis. I was asked to give some textual sources, but this is more of the type of talk where I hope you sit back and don't take copious notes and just try to, by osmosis, let it go into you and understand, because I'm going to try to give you more of a hashkafa of how to be a frum person in a very, very non-frum world. And I'll start off with something that the Chofetz Chaim says, which to me has always been, I think, an extremely important approach, a philosophical approach, if you wish, towards how a Jew should conduct himself, especially an Erlich Jew, a person, I don't like the word from, an Erlich Jew, how a person who is interested in making a Kiddush Shem Shemayim at every step of the way, how he should conduct himself when he's dealing with other Orthodox Jews, Jews who are not yet Orthodox, and the secular world, people who aren't Jewish. So the Chofetz Chaim writes, actually the Rambam writes first, this is the very first siman in all of Or HaChaim. So even if you're just beginning to learn, this is where you start. It's critically important. Or HaChaim, siman aleph, sif aleph. The Rambam says, v'lo yizbayesh b'nei odom, hamaligim olam. A person should not be embarrassed about being a shomer Torah mitzvos, even if everybody's ridiculing you. When you're by yourself, you also have to go and act properly. A person should know that he's constantly being watched. Okay, not only by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but by everybody else. If you wear a yarmulke, dress in sneas, you're obviously a religious woman. If you hold yourself out to be a Orthodox Jew, so everybody considers you a rabbi. You should know that. Very, very important idea. And therefore, a person has to act properly. Mishnah Berurah comments on this. Chofetz Chaim says, Al kol pochos lo yiskote dimoed. A person shouldn't look to fight. There's a million things that you could fight about. It's not a good midah to have. I'll tell you a story that happened when I went to medical school about a test that was given on Purim. Remind me if I forget to tell you that. Certain things you should fight about, certain things you shouldn't fight about. The Chofetz Chaim says, being in a combative, constantly argumentative, I'll show you type of an approach is a very, very difficult and wrong midah to have. The ain roin lishtamish mimena klal, afilu b'avodas Hashem yisparach. Person shouldn't use this tool even l'shem shemayim. Person has to be very reluctant to just fight for the sake of fighting, even when you're doing it l'shem shemayim. Ki yikne kinyan b'nafsho lios as, because it's going to change you. It's going to make you into a person who's a fighter. It's not good for shalom bayis with your spouse, not good for kehilos, it's not good for anything for a person to be always combative. And then you're going to end up doing it. Afilu shelo b'makom avodas Hashem yisparach. The person should know that we're not always looking to make battles. We're not always looking to go and confront. When schedules aren't exactly the way that you would like, and when things seem unfair in some way, lav dafka is a mitzvah daraisa for a person to go and fight. Shem shamayim. However, the Bir Halacha, again, another commentary on the Chofetz Chaim, he has a chance to expound on some of the more concise statements that he makes in the Mishnah Berurah. The Bir Halacha, the Chofetz Chaim points out a critical caveat to this idea. And he says, when the Beis Yosef, who was the source of this idea, although it's not written here in the Mechaber exactly, it's the Beis Yosef, he says, Lo ayri kiela b'mitzvah shu'osa liyatzma, u'bnei adam maligin olo. When is this approach good? Is when you're putting on tefillin in the encore room, and they snicker at you. He says, okay, let them snicker. Lavdaka, you have to go. Don't snicker with me. You don't know you're an Amoritz. Lavdaka is their mitzvah to go and fight them. I remember many times putting on tefillin in the encore room. You have the non-Jewish people walking in looking through, crazy. And the friar Jews, the people that unfortunately don't put on tefillin, look at you like you're crazy. It's a lot darker. You have to fight with them. You put your tefillin on, and that's it. However, he says, "Bevada ein lo lochush klal l'lagon." You work, so they're making fun of you for putting on tefillin. Not stopping you for putting on tefillin. They're ridiculing you. So who's really ridiculing who? Not darker. You have to make a fight out of it. Lo yiskotet imohem. Don't start up with them. Avol nu omei b'makom sheish apikorsim ha-miskomim mela-Torah v'rots lasos eze takonos v'nyoni ye'ir. But you're dealing with people that say it's not allowed to put on tefillin in your encore room. You're talking about people that say, why are the Jewish students getting kosher food? We want, also good food. They should have to have the same food as us. Why? Nothing about kosher. That when you're dealing with principles that do affect many Jewish people, when you're dealing with people that are attacking the Jewish religion, so then he says, Yechas v'shalom yaviru es ha'om yiratzon Hashem. So he says, first, pasach v'shalom. You try, you have to deal with that. You can't let that go by. You have to deal with that in a b'chavadik way, in a nice, friendly, collegial way, because these are often going to be your colleagues. However, v'lo nishma dvarav, they don't listen to you. So that's not what the Beis Yosef is talking about, be a meek Jew. Mitzvah l'sanosa u'l'skotet imon. In that situation, when they're attacking foundations of Yiddishkeit, if they're attacking fundamentals that you I want to be off base, hey base, because I fast. So you have to change the on-call schedule. So then, you're a fool if you make arguments like that. But when they say, no, the Jewish people, the Dafka, have to work these nights, even though you're entitled to vacation. Other things, dealing not only with Pikuach Nefashos in Yonim, but you have a test on Shabbos. So then, these things you have to fight. These things you're allowed to fight. And it's a mitzvah to fight. And it's a mitzvah to argue with them. Ulohofer atzoso. And to go and switch around what they're saying and doing. So this is a very important idea. And and this philosophy, this approach, if you wish, is codified in Shulchan Aruch. This isn't just a nice nusach shmuz. Chofetz Chaim is telling you practically the approach and the attitude that you should have when you're going to be dealing with, again, all sorts of people, religious, non-religious, Jewish, non-Jewish, throughout life. Chofetz Chaim is saying what he was. Be an Erlich Yid. Be honest and true. Know when to fight your battles and know when not to fight your battles. There's some things you just shouldn't be fighting. And I get a big pachad sometimes when I hear some of the battles that people are fighting, that those aren't the battles to fight. And then never hear sometimes the compromise in a minute is that those aren't the compromises to make. And you're not expected to know. I'm not necessarily expected to know. That's why I say l'charav. The second principle, the most important tenet that I could give you, is you gotta have a person that you can ask shilas to. You have a wonderful rav. You ask shilas to your rav. You have a kesher with one of your Rashi yeshiva from wherever you learned, from your shul rav. You gotta have a kesher with somebody that you can call up 24/7. I say 24/7 because sometimes you can have shilas that actually come up on Shabbos. Don't they say 24/6? But you could actually have shilas that come up on Shabbos. Yeah. Rav's not going to know to pick up the phone necessarily. You have to walk over. But there are ways to ask shilas on Shabbos too. There may be questions, hopefully you can predict beforehand what the shilas are going to be, because it's very difficult at 2 in the morning in the ICU to find people that you can easily ask shilas to. Even then, so you have to ask. No Rav is going to mind being woken up. I was an infectious disease fellow. My wife used to say gentamicin 80 milligrams on the phone because she knew what I was going to say. And we used to get woken up every hour of the night because we approved all the antibiotics for the entire hospital. So I was on call. I took call from home, but basically I was up all night. So you have to ask a shayla, The Rav doesn't mind getting woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning for a shayla that's a 2 o'clock in the morning shayla. It could have been asked at 2 in the afternoon, you wake at 2 in the morning. So then maybe you could rethink the way you do business. But a person needs to ask shaylas, and you should never be embarrassed. Lo habay shalom, man. If a person is embarrassed to ask shaylas, you're going to kill people. You're going to make mistakes left and right in medicine, and you're going to make mistakes left and right in halacha. There's no question that's a stupid question. Really, people, everybody says that, but you have to really know that. If you're not sure what to do, is this heart failure or not? Do I hear an S3? Do I not hear an S3? Is this? So ask. You can't be embarrassed about asking something that's pikuach nefashos. And the same thing in halacha. You can't be embarrassed. Oh, gee, I know I'm supposed to know this halacha in regard to Shabbos. What am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? But, I can't ask any of the rabbi gave the shiur on that last Shabbos, and I fell asleep, or I listened, and I forgot. So ask it again, because these are, Rumo Shalom, this is, lofty things. It's a capital crime to kill somebody in the setting of being a doctor, and it's a capital crime to be Mechal Shabbos. So a person has to know to ask shilas, and you have to establish a kesher. Sometimes you have to work on it. If you come from a background where you didn't have that kesher with somebody, so then you got to establish one. You got to seek out the kesher with somebody, because that's the only way you're going to be successful. And I thought, just to digress, if I could, from the parasha. So Avraham Avinu, in this week's parasha, says, Anochi ofor v'ether. I'm dust, I'm nothing. Talks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says, who am I? I don't have a right to talk to you. And yet, he talks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's not exactly meek and humble. Listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how can you destroy this town? So where do we see that Avraham Avinu is meek and humble? So that's really from last week's parasha, from yesterday's parasha, where we find that he says, Vayishma Avraham l'kol soroy. Vayishma Avraham l'kol soroy. Avraham listened to his wife. And all the Mephoshim bring down l'kol soroy was the Ruach HaKodesh that was in. He was also a big nabi. He was also a very important person. But he was clearly understanding that his wife was greater than him in respect to the Nevuah, either at that time or in general. And therefore, he subjugated his opinion, his desires, his wants, to listen to what his wife said. So you have to be meek and humble at times. You have to subjugate yourself to your Rabbanim. You have to subjugate yourself to the Das Torah, the people that know. And at the same time, you can't be meek and humble when it comes to people that are coming to attack the Torah. You have to stand up. If there's nobody else, you have to be the Ish. You have to be the person that stands up. So with that general introduction, I'd like to talk over a whole bunch of very specific scenarios that have come up in my career, that people have asked me questions about, and I encourage questions. Please, if you have a question on something that I'm saying, certainly if you have a situation that came up that you'd like to find out more about, so ask the question. And I'd be very happy to interrupt. I don't have a set saying that I have to go through it on my PowerPoint presentation today, that I got to get through it, or else it's, they throw you out of professor school. So it's this is an interactive discussion to a certain extent. The most important thing you can do as a medical student, as a doctor, as a from Jew, is to make a Kiddush Hashem. I mentioned before, you're clearly recognizably Jewish. Everybody else in the hospital is dressed differently. Everybody else in the class talks differently. And you're clearly recognizable as an observant, heirloom from Jew. So you have the opportunity to make a Kiddush Hashem every second of your life, which is the greatest thing a person can do. And Lahavdil, unfortunately, you have the opportunity to make a Chilul Hashem every second of your life, because look at that's the way Jews act. So a person has to be very much aware. Everything you do, when you're talking to your professors, when you're talking to your preceptors, when you're talking to any administrator, when you're talking to anybody, despite your zeal and desire to get what you want, then you're l'shem shamayim. You're doing it because, I got to get to my in-law's house for Shabbos. So I can't have that 2 o'clock Friday afternoon session or whatever it is, because I got to get to my in-law's for Shabbos. So you have to know that the way you act is the way they're going to perceive all the Jews. And it's making a Kiddush Hashem, making a Chilul Hashem. You're going to have to decide priorities on many of these things. You can't be over Nisa Shabbos when it's not permitted to be over Nisa Shabbos. But it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that you have to have every single thing that you would like for your personal life and comfort at the expense of making a Chilul Hashem. Let me give you that illustration that we did with, I mentioned before, with Purim. When I was in medical school, we had a test in pathology that was scheduled on Purim. And many of the chevra, we didn't have such a large chevra, but we had exactly a minion, and we had a minion for Dan Lakastos. We had a minion every single day. We had 11 guys, and we didn't miss minion once because of the shachos, at least. We didn't miss minion once during the first and second years. So that's, I think, a tremendously wonderful thing about people. Not all of them were orthodox in their background. Some of them wouldn't necessarily want to a minion if they hadn't been in such an environment. We had a test on Purim. And many said, listen, Purim is Yahar Vayavar. You have to observe Purim. So the test was in the late morning, early afternoon. Guaranteed you'd hear Megillah. Guaranteed to be home in time for Suluda. People decided to make a request, but against my recommendation, not that I had more right than anybody else, to go and postpone the test. The test eventually was postponed. It created such bad blood. It created the non-from kids in the class who knew about Purim, said, what are you doing? You're allowed to take the test on Purim. This isn't something that you're not allowed to do. And Purim is Halloween, the Yom. Purim is a party. Purim is getting drunk. Purim—that's what the view, unfortunately, of the non-Jewish, non-religious Jewish kids in the class was. And the administration—they're clueless. Religious reasons, sure, we'll postpone the test. And what happened? They had to make up a separate test. And they had to do all sorts of things. It was, in my opinion, a tremendous chilul Hashem, and it damaged us. Because whenever we did have something that was Yahore Vayavar for, that you really should fight for, so the administration heard from the other kids in the class, well, it's not that important. Well, they pulled the wool over your eyes for that Purim test. So then when they did have other things that would come up, all of a sudden the questions arose. Is it, how essential is this? Is this really something that's important for you? And this idea is going to carry through when you're making up schedules in your residency, when you're going to make up schedules even as a third or fourth year student, that they put you on call at a time that's inconvenient for you, but it's not in any way awesome in HaTorah or even in the Rabbanon or even for Minog Yisrael. And a person has to know when to fight and when not to fight. And the Chilul Hashem that we made at that point in time still bothers me to this day. This happened not that recently. Right? This is something that you have to be constantly aware of. And whenever I was in charge of making up schedules for many years, I was a chief resident, so I had the opportunity to make up the schedules. So I always used to take into account what is absolutely, I went to Shom Shabbos residency program, so I would make up the schedules to make sure that nobody was over on Shom Shabbos who went to such a residency, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But at the same time, I made sure that it was fair, that we shouldn't be taking advantage of other people. Remember, when you're not doing something, then somebody else has to do it. When you're leaving Friday much earlier than you have to because you have plans for the weekend, what you're really doing is dumping on somebody else. And that person who's being dumped on already feels that they're getting dumped on all the time by the Orthodox Jews. And it can be a very, very big Chilul Hashem, and especially if they're somewhat knowledgeable about Yiddishkeit and know what's mutter, what's not mutter. So you have to be very, very careful about that. I'd like to talk about a lot of the stuff that goes on outside the classroom. There are a tremendous amount of secular events and secular parties and all sorts of non-kosher events. The question is always asked is, are you supposed to go to them? Are you not? Is it going to be bad if you don't go? All the scenarios that you may have already encountered get worse as you grow up. And the opportunities for really, really wrong things to be done, having parties or inappropriate activities, and there's a tremendous amount of peer pressure. Everybody's going to this. So I want you to know that the answer that always given to me by people is why they have to go is because it's going to hurt them. If they don't go, they're going to somehow miss out on being in the club, being considered one of the guys or one of the gals, being considered for the promotions, being considered for the jobs and everything. And I tell you, sheker v'hevel. It's absolutely not true. You should never be putting yourself into a position where you have to compromise, go to a place where you don't feel comfortable going, where you know you shouldn't be going, even if you feel comfortable going, go to there. You should never feel the pressure to be fitting in with one of the guys, to fit in with the crowd, and they end up going to places that are wrong. So you shouldn't ever feel that you have to do this because it's parnasa, or you have to do this to be successful. One of our Rebbeim used to say to me all the time, he says, a person has to do the shtadlus, a person has to do appropriate amount of effort to make sure that he's successful, especially if he's doing that. Well, the psychologist, as Rav said, being a doctor is a very, very special thing. There aren't that many professions where you can do a mitzvah while you're doing your work. So as a doctor, your opportunity is to constantly do mitzvahs. So you could argue, and people have argued to me, well, I got to go to this party on Friday night. I can walk there. Right? Nobody's going to, I'm not going to be over any real Issa Shabbos. I'll walk there and I'll participate. I'll only have the things that are sort of acceptable in terms of eating. And I can get around with a couple of the Rabbanans, with the Shinui. Bottom line is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never ever will ask you to do Ishtadlus that goes against the Torah. That's the way my Rabbi have explained it to me, and it's 100% correct. The amount of ishtadlus that you have to do can never make it that you have to go against what the Torah says. Normal ishtadlus is appropriate efforts to put in. It can never be inappropriate efforts. One could argue, parnasa ishtadlus is to go work on Shabbos. That's parnasa. I have to do ishtadlus to make parnasa. So obviously that's ridiculous. So the same thing applies when it's doing activities that are pseudo-helping your parnasa. They don't. They have absolutely no effect on your eventual success as being the doctor, whatever you're doing in life. And you shouldn't feel the pressure to attend any of those things that are inappropriate, improper for a religious person, a Shomer Torah mitzvah, to be at. And the fact that everybody else on the team is going there, and the fact that everybody else on the team is going to make fun of you, so what? You got to be a big boy, a big girl, and realize that you're not out here to win a popularity contest. You're out here to be a very, very good doctor. You're out here to save human beings. You're out here to be successful in your career. And that's all subordinate to being a successful Jew. And there's no way you should ever compromise on being a successful Jew in order to be a successful doctor. The two are not, they're mutually not exclusive, right? You can be a successful Jew and be a successful doctor. They're like this. And anything that separates them is, by definition, l'anias dati raw. And you should be very careful about that, because you're going to be, as you go further in your careers, you're going to have more and more opportunities to be in such situations, and I think you should be very careful about them. I mentioned something about cheating. Unfortunately, there's cheating going on in medical school. There's all sorts of stuff going on that, you know, it's around. It's around. A person has to be very, very careful in Kiddush Hashem idea. If people see you cheating, even though you can get away with it, the administration won't catch you, the proctors don't catch you, but other people know. And there's always that mesorah that the frum kids have. And there's always all the other shtick that, I don't want to be makatrig on Klal Yisrael, but seems to be sometimes predominant as an acceptable way of getting through. So I want you to point out that this is very, very wrong. A person shouldn't be doing shtick. A person shouldn't be doing all sorts of kunsin, all sorts of inappropriate activity to succeed. And especially when you're going to be making a chil Hashem out of it. So you have to be very, very careful with all the opportunities that you'll have to do things that are not kehogan, that aren't proper, and especially when other people know about it. And even though they're not going to tattle on you, and even though everybody does it, so you have to be very careful that you shouldn't do it. And if that means not getting honors in the course, and if that means not getting the plum residency that you wanted, so then I guarantee you, you'll be much better off in your life. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will watch over you, and you will do much better without taking these devious and incorrect and halachically wrong and Chil Hashem wrong ways and approaches. And maybe you're jumping around in a number of different things, so I want to give some text and some hashkol for some very new, a very interesting question comes up all the time. Can you guys study on Shabbos? Comes up all the time. Not talking about working on Shabbos, not talking about doing malacha on Shabbos, not talking about doing isurim that people are aware of on Shabbos. You're talking about you're sitting around, you Baruch Hashem just had a beautiful Shabbos meal, you're not working on Shabbos, and you have that big, nephrology exam. It was one of my least favorite subjects. And you're trying to figure out what in the world is going on in the renal cortex, and you don't have a clue why the potassium is going this way, the sodium is going that way. And the test is on Monday, and Shabbos afternoon. It's a long Shabbos afternoon, so you take out the textbook. Are you allowed to? You're ahead to do that. So I read you in Orach Chaim Shin Zayin. Machaber writes in Sif Yud Zayin. Also, Lulmo B'Shabbos V'Yomtiv Zulaz V'Divrei Torah. You're not allowed to learn anything other than Torah on Shabbos. Apilu Sifrei Chochmos, also. Even biochemistry, even Sifrei Chochmos is awesome. Then Baruch Hashem, so you don't all be upset. Yesh mishamatim. He then brings down the opinion of the Ramban and the Rashba, who says that one is permitted to read Sifrei Chochmos on Shabbos. And he says, al pisvar raso, according to this opinion, mutu lahabit be itzrulob b'Shabbos. I think an itzrulob sounds to me like it's a telescope. You'd be allowed to even look at a telescope. You want to look at the stars on Shabbos on Friday night, so you're allowed to even move it, adjust it, it's not even booked, so he says, and looking isn't the problem. So the Mechaber quotes, this is often the case, the opinion is more machmir, the opinion is more makil, the lenient and more strict opinions, so how do we possibly? So the Mishnah Brura says, because of a Mishnah Brura, I'm reading from the Chokh Masod, but that's why I'm not marrying the Mishnah Brura directly, just because he did bring one to say for the three. The Chay Nohagim Lohokil. He says the minhag is to be lenient, to allow learning of these things on Shabbos. Ula, he says, Yorei Shomayim, brings up the name of the El Yerava, Yorei Shomayim Roy Lahachmir Bezek Yaram Arambam Ve'oran Osrim. One shouldn't leave all of this studying for Shabbos afternoon. If you can't accomplish it in the standard time that you have, so then Shabbos afternoon is an acceptable Yesh Nishim Matirim. The Ramban and the Rashba are very, very broad shoulders to rely upon. But to say, well, listen, I'm going to go out Thursday night, and I'm going to go and play ball Friday afternoon. We get out of classes early, and I'll come to Shabbos, and Baruch Hashem, I got Shabbos afternoon to do all my studying. So then, that's an inappropriate approach as well. I'm not going to say it's awesome. You have gedolim that you can rely upon. This is for the general world. What about for medicine? What about medicine? Is it any different for medicine? So, the Chochmas Avraham over here, I'm sorry, the Nishmas Avraham, he brings down over here. Mutul Fisforoso La Ayin Bisepe Rufuos. Says, certainly according to this, one has a heter to go and read your biochemistry book, to read Harrison, Cecil, whatever your preference might be. Savistin for the surgeons amongst you. Lumo Ben, and to study them. Mishum Chochma, this is allowed. Don't compare this to reading some legal document or to reading the New York Times or to reading other things. It says Chochma of Rufua is like an elevation above the rest of the Chochmos. It's a Hechshu Mitzvah. It is a wonderful thing. He says you can do it. And then he writes, and I saw this as well in the Sforum from Shlomo Zalman, that's how. So Shlomo Zalman was a posek in Eretz Yisrael, the posek, he and Rav Moshe were the major posek dealing with a lot of medical shaylos, Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Wolfenberg, Tzitz Al as well. They were most of the major piskei halacha that I use or follow my rabbein use come from these gedolei ha'olam. And he says, the rove, a physician, you're an intern and you have a really tough case of the ICU. It's been bothering you. You take out your Harrisons on Shabbos afternoon to figure out what you're going to do. You go to Matzah Shabbos and you want to figure out what to be done. He says, that's absolutely Kavod Nami Mitzvah. He says, not only is that not Chokmos Hagoyim, not only is that something that's neutral at best, he says, it's a mitzvah. You're bothered by your case. You have a patient's life at risk. So, Avada. It's a mitzvah, he says, to go and read up on the journals. Your generation doesn't know how to read a journal anymore. You just go online. So, I still like to read real paper. So, I can't read journals online. So, I find out where they are, and then I go get the hard copy or print it out. So, I don't know what's going to happen when everything is online. Within the next couple of years, nobody's going to even know what paper looks like anymore. You're just going to take out your PDA or whatever it is and read from there. So then you're going to have a lot of shilas on Shabbos. Because that already, that's no hefty to do that except real pikuach mefashos. You know, you don't know what to do. The guy's right there in front of you. So then, you know, there might be a heter in that situation. I'm not possibly that lemaisa, but at least there's a habit needed to think that there'd be a heter to go to a computer and do a search of a guy who's sick in the ICU right then and there. And Shabbos, and you're the man that's responsible. But to go and do that with a text, with a journal, it says a mitzvah ka'avid. A person had to go over to do that. The host of the Agoins, that's how the Nishma Sabram, Dr. Abraham, he says that Rosh Shlomo Zalman told him, Ba'al Peh. Didn't put it in writing. And this I've never seen in writing other than the Nishma Sabram. She's student, medical student, and Rafua Tzorech Lachach. He says here, he's not so sure that you have that heter and that you're going to be able to just pull out whatever medical texts or journals you'd like to. Because you're not really doing real hands-on care. You're preparing for your test. You're studying to be a good doctor. You're studying so 10 years from now, you're going to go and be able to take care of a patient. So he says that's not so clear that that's allowed. He says maybe you should be amongst the machmir. He doesn't say it's possible. The Sunni doesn't say, he suggests Sarah Ahmed. Rosh Shlomo Zalman said a person should be machmir in that situation. Okay, now I'm not going to tell you that you can't go and study for a test on Shabbos, but I'm just pointing out that one should, at much as possible, not leave stuff for Shabbos to go. You have gedolim that you can rely upon and say it's permissible. At the same time, what do you do on Sunday? On Sunday, you want to watch one of the Giants, they want to see Favre play in Green Bay because of the Yankee game. So you can spend 12 hours today watching television. So is that the reason that you're going to go and learn on Shabbos your nephrology exam because you want to watch the game on Sunday, so let me ask that to you. You've got to set priorities. But if you're not going to be doing that, you'll spend all 12 hours today studying for nephrology exams, and then there's room for the Yare Shemayim, even I think, to take out a text on Shabbos.
About the illness of Hachana?
Hachana doesn't really seem to be a major discussion in the posting in that situation, because you really, I mean, theoretically, the tests aren't for the tests. I know that that's hard to believe. It's really, you're really not starting for the tests. You're starting to know this information to take care of a person later on in life. It's a kasha. You're really studying for the information. I think that's the svar.
Yeah. When you met like these students and doctors, what about like a sabbai or, you know?
I think he's really not differentiating so much between students and doctors as between people that have patient care responsibility and people that don't. Even a third year student, if you're taking care of that patient, granted you're not making any decision without 18 people watching you over the shoulder, but I love third year students. They ask the best questions and they make me think more than a lot of other people, and I think that a person who is involved in patient care as opposed to somebody who's studying it just for the test or just for the knowledge, so there's a huge difference. I mean, to throw it back into the halacha l'maisa aspect, what about doing an autopsy? So it's the same exact child. If you're doing an autopsy on somebody who's there right in front of you, holy lefano, there's the lashon of the note of the Yehuda, it's famous true, but you're allowed to do an autopsy. So the answer is, yeah, halacha demands that you do an autopsy. You're giving experimental chemotherapy to patients with pancreatic cancer. And you're on the investigational ward, and the patient in bed A never passes away, and the patient in bed B is getting the same medication. You want to know, did the patient in bed A pass away from the medication, or was it the natural progression of the disease, or was it some other event? And the guy in bed B, depending on your decision, will continue to get that potential life-saving medicine, or will get that life-threatening medicine. So, Lania's dati, based on my understanding of the post-game, 100% mechuyev to do an autopsy on the patient to bed A. Holy lufano. The sick person would benefit from that knowledge is right there in front of you. So what's the issue? Nivul hameis. What's the nivul hameis? The person, if you go out in the cautious, you're about to mechal Shabbos. It's a much stricter level of issue that you're transgressing in theory. It's doing a mitzvah, so it's not called transgressing if you mechal Shabbos when you're allowed to. We'll just use that terminology. So holy lufano, if you're allowed to. 10 years from now, somebody may have the same problem. It would be really nice to know if pathologists tell you that you should do 100% of the cases you do autopsies on, because you never know, and it's great, it's good knowledge, and if we don't do enough autopsies, they'll lose their residency program. So those are not valid reasons to do an autopsy. So therefore, that idea, when you have that person in front of you that you're learning for, so then I think there's a lot of room to be made. And even in the other situations, you know, ask your rabbi what you should do, what you should study and not. Again, I put it in the perspective of what are you doing with your free time that's not Shabbos fun. And the answer to that is I'm studying them also, so that I think there's room for you to be able to rely upon the Yesh Matir and the Ramah that's based upon the Rashba and the Ramban. I'm running out of time very quickly. That's what time do we have? Honestly, don't think it's ridiculous.
Just a moment.
Okay. And if anybody does have to go, I will be the first person to walk out of the way. Okay. Try to pick some other important things. Yarmulke. That's always a hot subject. Should you or should you not wear a yarmulke? Girls in the room, should you or should not wear a hat if you're married, a sheifer? It's less of a problem for women because they're not really engaging in something that is so obviously Jewish when they dress in tzniyos. There are still about 1% of the population that's not Jewish that dress in tzniyos. So it's not so bad. The yarmulke, the only reason people wear a yarmulke is because they're an Orthodox Jew or a Roman Catholic bishop. Pretty much the only reasons that you wear a yarmulke. I've had the pleasure of speaking to both. The wearing of a yarmulke is a statement. And I would say that today it's not a shayla. And I'm not sure ever was a Shiloh, but it was a much bigger Shiloh 30, 40, 50 years ago, when people said, well, if I go into court or a yarmulke, I lose the case. If I go into the business where we're a yarmulke, I won't get any business. So are you mechuyev to wear a yarmulke 100% of the time or not? So that's a shaila that I'm not going to really paskin for you. But you can go see what the poskim say. There certainly is, I think it's the first truth of the Igros Moshe, that discusses this in great detail, that you have to wear a yarmulke all the time. So there's room to be made. That's what I'll say on that subject. From a hashgacha point of view, from a very practical point of view, I'll tell you that the yarmulke is the best thing that ever happened to religious boys working in the business world. Nobody curses in my presence. At least they don't do it twice. Nobody acts in a certain way in my presence. Now, a little bit because you reach a certain level up, so then they're afraid of you. But at the same time, when you're wearing yarmulke, people don't say, hey, let's go out to the bar. What are you doing after work? You want to go to this film? It's inappropriate. Wearing yarmulke is a life vest to Yiddish guy. When you're working in a non-Jewish, very secular, very amoral world. We live in a Medina Shel Chesed, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But Medina Shel Chesed doesn't mean that everything they do is paskin dem Shulchan Aruch. There's a lot of inappropriate opportunities out there, and when you're wearing a yarmulke, or for a girl, when she's dressing in a certain way, you suddenly don't get asked those questions, and you suddenly, oh, I'm sorry. And it's the best thing to protect you from a lot of trouble. So I would strongly recommend that you wear your yarmulke, wear it on your interviews. The worst thing you can do, Chil Hashem was, is not wear the yarmulke in the interview and then show up on day one for the yarmulke. I think that's a Chil Hashem. Let them know. And you know what? You don't want to work in a place where they're not going to take you as a Jew wearing your yarmulke. You're much better off not being in that most prestigious residency in the world, which 10 years later makes no difference whatsoever. You become a good doctor in pretty much any program that you go to if you study and put an effort. Once you reach a certain level of the program being an acceptable program, it just doesn't make that much of a difference. It depends if your goal is to win the Nobel Prize, maybe. You can also be a very good doctor. You can be a very good doctor coming out of a lot of programs. So I would tell you that the wearing of a yarmulke is an extremely useful, beneficial thing, and you should absolutely do it unless you have a particular reason why you can't. And I've yet to come up with anybody that can give me a particular reason why you shouldn't do it. You're going to have a ton of kashas to come up with food.
Particularly in a place outside of New York or go to like Arkansas or something.
All the more reason to wear a yarmulke. All the more reason.
And not as a resident, but as a physician later on.
All the more reason. All the more reason. You have to establish that there are boundaries. When you're wearing that yarmulke, you're establishing boundaries that otherwise aren't there. I feel very strongly about this, and I can't quote you a chapter or verse from the text. Just, it's a very good protection. People have told me, Rabbeim have told me, that the Talmidim have told them, that they were saved from certain potential troubles because they were wearing a yarmulke. And I'm not talking about from a spiritual, Kabbalistic sense, because you're wearing a yarmulke, so the shade didn't attack you. Practical. He wasn't invited to an inappropriate party. He's not coming to that. He's observant. Whereas the kid that doesn't wear a yarmulke gets invited and inappropriate behavior occurs. I feel very strongly about that, and I guarantee you, I can't tell you this, other than this, my own personal experience, you're not going to be hurt because you're wearing a yarmulke. You just won't. I hire people, I fire people. You know, wearing yarmulkes doesn't come into the discussion.
Just to follow up on those questions, what's different about like Arkansas?
Let's say that for the patient's point of view, so the patient might see you. If someone were to come in, I don't want to make any stereotypes, but if someone were to come in with certain types of religious garb,
right,
and was taking care of me, so I might second guess certain things. So I might not, you know.
I hear what you're saying, but that's not a reason. In fact, you have an opportunity to change that person's opinion. Whatever their opinion was of Orthodox Jews, their opinion afterwards would be, wow, that's Orthodox Jews. I got to rethink my approach to what it means to be an Orthodox Jew. Hopefully, that will be the result of your interaction with them. Then again, an opportunity for Kiddush Hashem aside, I wasn't even referring to that. Your answer now, I would say, is an additional opportunity for Kiddush Hashem. If they're going to be uncomfortable being seen by an Orthodox doctor, so let them go see God and get a doctor, if that's their approach. You're not going to lose parnassah because of that. And I do think that if you're good enough, they're going to say, I want the Jew doctor. One of my friends, tell the Jew squad. He didn't wear a yarmulke. He's a warrior, not a doctor. He didn't wear a yarmulke once because he was afraid to get down to the deep south. It wasn't Arkansas, it was Texas. Went down to the deep south, and he was afraid to wear his yarmulke. This was 20, 25 years ago. And the guy had a big southern accent, you know, shook his head and said, I was hoping to get one of those Jew lawyers. That's what the guy told me. Now, where is his yarmulke since that time? He said, listen, this guy, I lost business almost because I didn't wear the yarmulke. It's a true story. A big shot boy, you told me the story when he was starting out. So it's, I think it's a very important thing. You should ask a Shiloh if you're not going to do it. And I don't think you need to ask a Shiloh if you're going to do it. I'm telling you, it won't hurt your parnosa. I'm telling you, it won't hurt you going into any residency. If you're good enough to get in with the yarmulke, you're good enough to get in with the yarmulke. I feel strongly about that. I can't show you chapter and verse. There is room to be made from a halachic, pure point of view. I'm telling you from a hashkafic point of view, I think it's a very, very important thing. Food. You're going to be constantly coming up in a situation where food is being served. And can you eat it or not? So obviously, I'm not talking here about basic and kashrus. You can't eat the stuff that's not kosher. It's going to come up all the time. They say, well, this is kosher. And they don't tell you the details of the kosher, or they tell you, hey, we're getting it from this place and it's not wrapped. So there are halachas that you need to know about food when it comes into a place, in terms of, even though it may really be kosher, you're still not allowed to eat it. And I don't want to go into all the details, I just want to make you aware that just because something is put out there and it's quote kosher doesn't mean that you're allowed to eat it. And there are halachas in terms of whether you need to have simanim, one simon, two simon on it, whether if it's unwrapped, and then you leave the room, what are the dinim of this? And I know for myself, whenever I order food, I have to order perfectly good food. My staff knows nobody touches the food until I come in there. That's not because I'm such a glutton, but they know you don't open up the food without Glatt being there. So this relieves all the problems in the stores that we order from. So they double wrap. So there's no shyness, no questions. Otherwise, when you come in, and it's laid out there, when you're coming in the rep, there's always a drug rep, says, oh, don't worry, this is kosher. So it depends. Does he have nemonis? Does he have nemonis? I'm not going to go through all the specific details as to what defines whether he does or doesn't have nemonis. And there are many circumstances where it's permissible and many circumstances where it's not permissible. Just because it's, quote, kosher and all the other yarmulkes are eating from it doesn't mean that you should ask a shayla what you're allowed to do in those situations. It's not always crystal clear. You're going to be asked a zillion things to do in the course of your taking care of patients that may be halachically problematic. You're going to go through your GYN rotation, and on the OR schedule, it's going to say D&C, which is rotation and curettage, which may be an abortion. And you're not doing the abortion, but you're going to be sitting there holding the retractors, you're going to be sitting there watching. So you have to know, you may not be permitted to be involved in that in any way, shape, or form. You're going to be asked to do certain things in end-of-life issues. You know, the attendant's going to say, I want this stopped, write the order to stop this therapy. Or I want you to wean this patient, write the order to wean, a terminal wean, which is another way of saying let's pull the ventilator tube from this patient. So without getting into all the different postgame and all the discussions on any individual procedure, you should know that you're going to be in a situation where you're going to be, without recognizing it maybe, doing a certain daraisa. And you need to be aware of what's allowed, what's not allowed, what the procedures really entail, and not what they sometimes are supposed to be doing, what the purpose of doing some of these things are. And you have to ask your postdoc whether you're allowed to or not allowed to participate in that. And the further you go along in your career, you're going to have more of a say in what's done and what's not done. So this is really true for your student years and for your training years, more so than for later in life. The gynecologist that doesn't want to do anything that's awesome in Torah, so he just doesn't see those patients, or he refers those patients, or he doesn't get involved in doing those procedures. But as the resident on the floor, you know, hey, you're assigned to do this, so do it, or else you're going to be in trouble. So, A, you'll never be in trouble. There is absolutely medical ethics, secular ethics, permission for a person to not do something that they're morally objective to. And that's where I think the Mishnah Berurah is talking about. You got to stand up and fight for your rights. You shouldn't be meek there and say, well, you know, if this attending doesn't give me an honors in this course, I won't get this. Or if, you know, if they give me a bad mark, I won't get the plum job that I'm looking for. So that's, you know, you're not allowed to do something like that. You're not allowed to be able to assume the rights and make money. So you need to know what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And when you go through certain rotations, especially, you have to be aware of what the issues are. The last thing, I have only 2 more minutes left, I won't be able to discuss Shabbos. Shabbos is an extremely difficult and complex subject. And I'm not going to tell you that you absolutely have to go to a Shomer Shabbos residency. There are certainly halachically 100% kosher poskim and ways to go through non-Shomer Shabbos residencies. Here I give you again my own advice, personal advice. A Shomer Shabbos residency allows you to maintain a normal Jewish lifestyle. If you're not compromising, which I don't think you are, your training and education by going to a good Shomer Shabbos program, so I would strongly recommend that people take Shomer Shabbos programs as best as they possibly can. Even if it's not 100% Shomer Shabbos, whatever you can work out. The American postgame, Rav Moshe Zatzal, has related to me, halacha l'maisa for me, by my rabbein, a person should avoid as much as possible working on Shabbos, even when you have halacha. Again, I'm only talking about working on Shabbos for doctors, talking about it's on tape, so I don't want anybody to think that if you're an accountant, you can go on Shabbos. Again, be very careful when you're on tape. It's only for people that are working in a field where it may be permissible to do certain things on Shabbos. Even if you work on Shabbos as a doctor, it doesn't mean you're over any yisurim. You have to be a baki in Shulchan Aruch. If you're going to work on Shabbos, I would tell you, don't do Daf Yomi, as much as I love Daf Yomi. Don't do Zvachim. Don't go learn philosophy. Or you should be spending your every waking opportunity in learning is to learn Hilchos Shabbos. Because if you're going to work on Shabbos, you'll be literally doing capital crimes left and right if you don't know Hilchos Shabbos cold. I don't feel comfortable with Hilchos Shabbos to work in a hospital on Shabbos. And Baruch Hashem, I never have. And that's the psak of Moshe, that a person should do everything possible not to work on Shabbos as a student, as a resident, as an attending. It's not always possible. I'm not saying it's always possible, but you should do everything possible. What do I mean you should do everything possible? Chris, I'd like to switch with you Saturday for Sunday. Is that okay? No, it's not okay. I'd like to watch whatever I'm watching on Sunday. Okay, Chris, I'll give you 2 Sundays for Saturday. Ooh, okay. Where does it say in the Torah it has to be a fair switch? Where does it say that I work 17 hours, you got to work 17 hours? No. The Willich Shlita Oaks is telling us you switch 2 for 1, switch 3 for 1. You can always up the ante. And as much as you possibly can. You can't say I'll work every single night of the year except Shabbos. It's not physically possible. I'll give you my vacation month and you trade me this Sunday for Shabbos. So it can't be ridiculous. It can't be undoable. But, okay, so I'll give you a couple of that. The next time you want to leave early, you know, I'm the guy to call to. You want to be off on Thanksgiving and I was off on Thanksgiving. Sure, I'll give you my Thanksgiving day. Forget Shabbos. Person has to do everything possible not to work on Shabbos. That's the psak of the American post. To be perfectly honest, the Israeli poskim, Shlomo Zalman and others, don't hold that way. They say that it's better for a frum Jew to work on Shabbos than it is for a non-frum Jew. It's based upon the Beis Halevi, and it's difficult for me to understand Shita. That's my problem. Not not their problem. It seems to me so clear and obvious that Moshe is correct, not that that adds anything to his side. I remember once one of our Rebbeim saying, Machlok is the Taz and the Shach, and one of the kids in the class said, I think the Shach is right. So the Rebbe said, I don't think the Taz lost any sleep just now. So my coming down on the side of Moshe doesn't really get the Rosh Hashanah nervous at all. But again, my Rebbeim have passed for me, Lamaisa, and this is the psak in America, especially when you're dealing with Hasidim who aren't 100% Jewish, that it is preferable to make as many switches as you possibly can. And if you can do a Shomer Shabbos residency, call a kavod, or whatever you can make it, so it's 80% Shomer Shabbos, or whatever percentage you can make it, that it's Shomer Shabbos in the sense that you don't have to work on Shabbos, I would suggest that you do that. If you are in situations where you are going to work on Shabbos, you really have to know the halacha is called. You really have to know what you can do, what you can't do, what needs a shinui, what doesn't need a shinui. You're dealing with the koach apostles. If you're a big machmir on Chilul Shabbos, then you're a big makel sometimes of the koach apostles. It works both ways. So you really have to know stuff very well. You should try to figure out beforehand what the issues will be so you can prevent or get halachic advice before it's 2 a.m. Shabbos morning and you don't have who to call or you don't know what to do. So my most sage advice comes back to the very beginning. I say l'chara, know what you should do. Get a psak halacha, Rebbe, what should I do? Should I go Shom Shabbos or not? And follow what your Rebbe says. I guarantee you. If you follow what your Rebbe says, you won't go wrong. Pick your Rebbe. He's the one you ask all your shaylos to. The one thing is clear. When you go into the hospital on Shabbos, people have told me, from Orthodox people who are otherwise Shomer Torah mitzvahs, good people say, when I go into the hospital on Shabbos, it's not Shabbos anymore. That is 1,000% halachically incorrect. That is 1,000% hashkafically incorrect. It leads a terrible, terrible, terrible nisun to be done. It's still Shabbos when you're working in the hospital on Shabbos, and you have to be aware of that. And that applies to every single second of that day. I've run out of time. I appreciate your listening. We're all here in such a spellbound silence. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to try to take them. And I thank you very much for inviting me. I'm glad you're up for allowing me to come this week.
Once again, thank God. It was an extremely spellbinding talk and really very practical, very comfortable. And I really thank you for taking this time.
If you have questions, everybody can stay or not stay. I don't know what you want to do.
Any questions? Yeah.